Greetings! I'm Lord Bruticus, the Brutal One of Dark Empire Radio, and you're listening to the Wampa's Lair.
Welcome to the Wampa's Lair podcast. Deep in the bowels of the frozen ice caverns of Hoth, our hosts, Carl LeClaire and Jason Hunt, have been frozen upside down to the cave ceiling with nothing to do but talk all things Star Wars. So make yourselves comfortable, but keep a wary eye out for trouble here in the Wampa's Lair.
Hello, everybody, and welcome once again to the Wampa's Lair podcast, episode 9,
Fan Controversies.
My name is Jason Hunt, and with me, as always, is the Darth Vader to my Emperor Palpatine. We have Mr. Carl LeClaire.
Hello, my master. How are you tonight? I come to do your bidding.
Excellent.
Jason. I like tonight that I get to be your underling for once, because you're always humbling yourself. It's about time I get humbled. Thank you.
Thanks. You know, I mean, I figured, you know, it's not too much of a humble because, you know, Darth Vader is still awesome. So
Indeed. Matt Cranky's going to be jealous. Yes, he'll be jealous of that one. He came up with the Han to the Chewie, but he's the Vader lover, so he's going to probably want to steal that.
we're not copywriting it, Crankster, so if you feel like you want to use it, I guess you could use it.
you're such a giving man, Jason. Such a good man.
I try.
So tonight we have a should be a very exciting show. We're gonna bring up some of the things that rub Star Wars fans the wrong way, and you know, other Star Wars fans seem to love. So we're just gonna hit some of those big points tonight, but before we get to that, of course, we have our lightsaber matchup from last week, where we pitted Jedi Master Shaak Ti versus the Dark Lady of the Sith, the assassin Asajj Ventress, and we got quite a few responses again this time. Jason, I'm going to let you go ahead and read those as you always do. So, let's hear what the people had to say.
Alrighty, well, our friend Jazz from Norway once again wrote in, and he says, "Gotta go with Asajj on this one. She has so much rage built up inside her and has stood toe-to-toe against the likes of Anakin and Obi-Wan, and although she has pretty much always high-tailed and run, she has put up a pretty formidable fight, and even managed to flirt with Master Kenobi between lightsaber blows. Based on deleted scenes from the movies and what I've read about Shaak Ti, I'm not a gamer, so I haven't actually seen her battle in the games, I see Shaak Ti as more of a meditator, calm and centered in the Force, but less of a fighter. In Clone Cadets and ARC Troopers, she seemed to be more of an overseer than a fighter. Although she was in charge of clone trooper training, in the end, Asajj's unbridled fury and two lightsabers would ultimately triumph." And then we also got a response from Mr. Lord Bruticus himself, who was on our last show. He says, "I have to say Ventress." Big shock there. "Two sabers of dark-sided malice versus one weapon of confused nobility. Plus the fact that Shaak Ti can't decide when to be killed. Grievous, Anakin, and a Sarlacc creature have all killed her somehow. Make Ventress the logical choice to put her T-ness where she belongs once and for all." And said only the way that the Brutal One can put that. Brian V. Klein also wrote in again. He says, "I agree. I think Ventress would win this fight. Shaak Ti seems to be more of a philosopher and a teacher than a fighter. But then again, no one knew just how great of a swordsman Yoda was until Geonosis. But Asajj has stood toe-to-toe with Anakin, Obi-Wan, and also Anakin and Obi-Wan, and Dooku. And I think now all of her pent-up rage could fly out and lead to a victory. I can't wait for the final four-part episode of the Maul Oppressed arc of this season's Clone Wars, since it mentions that it will feature Asajj and Dooku seeking revenge for the betrayal of Asajj and the Night Sisters. That was all on Facebook, and then we got on Twitter, Bethany from the Star Wars Report says, I think Shaak Ti, because she has an aggressive streak and control. Ventress is aggressive, but she doesn't have much control. And then we also got an email from Chris Hothice Planet Smith, and he says, hey guys, I have to go with Shaak Ti. Why? Because for some reason I just love Shaak Ti. It would definitely be an interesting battle, for sure. And that puts our fan responses with a 3-2 advantage to Asajj Ventress, and it's up to Carl and I to determine where this battle will fall. And I shall turn it over to you, Lord Vader.
Thank you. I can't do a deep voice. I'm not even going to try. I'm going to have to, tip the scales in the favor of Asajj Ventress. Again, we haven't seen Shaak Ti do that much, so it's and I don't know if she's mentioned more in some of the Clone Wars novels. If she is, I wouldn't know. I've not read many of them, and by many I mean any. We see very little of her in the films, and I think it is her. She's very passive. You know, she has a lot of the Obi-Wan Kenobi in her, but I don't see the fight in her that Obi-Wan has, and I don't think she would stand too much of a chance. I mean, I don't think she'd be, easily defeated. She is a Jedi Master, but I agree with, some of what, the other people, our other listeners were saying on Facebook is, we've seen Asajj Ventress go toe-to-toe with Obi-Wan and Anakin, and, she doesn't do too bad. I mean, granted, Anakin and Obi-Wan aren't quite up to the strength they are in Episode 3, but I think it's safe to say that she would come out the victor in that one. I think she's a lot more adept with her lightsaber combat. I mean, she was trained by Dooku, so she's, not only is she sly as an assassin, but she also has, she's been trained in Mitashu, however you say the form two.
Makashi.
Wow, not even close. Thank you. At least I got the letter right. But, she knows Makashi, and she's using two blades. I personally think that Shaak Ti'd be in a lot of trouble. And by a lot of trouble, I mean dead. So, my friend, what do you think, Emperor?
I'm going to have to disagree with you, my friend. I'm going to give this to Shaak Ti in a very close matchup. We've seen with Ventress, especially in the Clone Wars, that she's a bit of a loose cannon, for starters. She's very skilled, yes, but she flies off the handle and gets sloppy. Luminara called her sloppy, her fighting style, unrefined and sloppy. Which really takes Ventress off and she loses control. Shaak Ti, like Bethany said, definitely is in control. And I have read some of the novels and some of the comics during the Clone Wars. And, in the comics, Shaak Ti handles herself very, very well. In one of the novels, I believe it's Labyrinth of Evil, that takes place right before Revenge of the Sith, Mace Windu describes Shaak Ti as beautiful as a flower, but deadly as a viper. I think, at the end of the day, being a Jedi Master, being in control, I think Shaak Ti, and I think Shaak Ti also has a better mastery of the Force. So where Ventress may be powerful, she doesn't have the control to master it as far as Shaak Ti would. So in the end, I think Shaak Ti would pull out a narrow victory.
All right, then. Well, hey, there you go. So what is that? 4-3. That is Asajj Ventress.
Yep. Yes, I think that's one of our closest duels that we've had so far.
Well, except for our infamous tie. Who was the tie? Darn it.
That was Anakin versus Mace Windu.
That's right. That was a straight up tie. I liked that one. But last week, boy, our Jason Solo, Savage Opress, that one was kind of a landslide.
But yeah, so it's nice to have one that's a bit closer this time. So
yeah, and I'm very excited for the duel that we'll be introducing at the end of the show for next episode. But for those of you, you'll just have to stay paying attention, or just fast forward to the end of the episode. Do what you want, but we hope you listen.
We would hope that you would listen to the podcast that we've worked so hard to give to you. So
yes, I'm literally,
we hope that you're not just turning in for the lightsaber battles. So.
Yeah, now, I know my hamsters are right now spinning their wheel, just producing the electricity to run my computer. So you know, it is indeed a lot of work.
Well, out here in Arizona, I've got roadrunners doing the same thing. So,
oh, much faster, much faster. Well, Jason, how about we hop into this topic for tonight?
Yes, fan controversies, things that get the fans irked. There's obviously a lot of these things, and so we're not going to be covering all of them because there's just way too many to cover in one show. So fear not if we did not address some of the ones that you guys brought up on Facebook. We shall most likely get to those at a later date. But these are the ones that we have picked out for tonight, and I will let Carl kick it off.
Oh, well, how generous of you again. Before we start, I want to make it clear, because I, based on a lot of the stuff I read on Facebook from our listeners, you know, we've got a lot of diehard fans that listen to us, obviously. And I just want to preface by reiterating what hardcore fans Jason and I both are. I don't take necessarily all the same opinions as some of our listeners, but, you know, I ask that you all still respect my opinions as I respect yours. And, you know, I think the reason we even picked this topic is, at least I'm sure you're all aware of, George Lucas openly saying he'd be retiring from major blockbuster films, and you know, his comment about Star Wars films, about how he wouldn't want to make any more because people yell at him and whatnot. The purpose of tonight's episode is to not yell at George Lucas, is not to critique the films. Jason and I love these films so much, or else why else would we be making a podcast? So that's certainly not in question, and I think again, the fact that even fans create these controversies is a testament to just how important these films are. Again, you know, you don't hear people sitting down arguing about the Titanic, you know, which was supposedly one of the top-selling films of, you know, movie history. You know, you don't have people sitting down complaining about that movie. So, again, I think, like I mentioned briefly last week in our last episode, that, you know, the fact that there are these controversies, again, just show how much and how important these films are to all of us. So that's enough of that, enough of my proselytizing. Jason, do you want to say anything about that before I start bringing in some topics, or shall we just jump in?
Just real quick. Yeah, most of these things, you know, we are issues that we're talking about because we do have opinions on them. We do. Sometimes we have negative opinions on some of these things, or disagreements with some of these things, not negative opinions. But that's because we're so invested in Star Wars in general. I generally don't have a lot of disagreements with this kind of stuff, just because I'm the kind of person that rolls with the punches normally. But I do, there are some things that I do have some issues with that we will discuss. But I do want to say, we are Star Wars fans, pure and simple, all the way down to the core, and we love these movies, and we want to bring some of these things to you, some of these topics to you, maybe give you another perspective on these things, maybe change some people's minds, or at least broaden your horizons to other possibilities with some of these topics. So we're not necessarily here to gripe and complain, more as just open up wider realms of discussion.
Always well put. That's why I love you as a co-host and as a person.
Well, thank you.
Yes. So, again, you know, anything that I mentioned that I don't like, again, doesn't mean I don't like Star Wars. There are a few changes that I'm not crazy about. But Jason and I were talking very briefly before we even started recording tonight. There's really only one, which I'll get to in a little bit later this evening, but there's only really one that really somewhat took away from my experience of Star Wars. But overall, you know, I think quite a few of them are great, and a lot of them to me is just like, oh, whatever, you know. I don't see why this was needed, but at the same time, I'm not going to complain about it because, again, it didn't take away from my experience of Star Wars. So, anyway, I think we're going to start with one that Jason and I assume are going to have similar opinions on, and I wouldn't be surprised if a lot of you listening have similar opinions, but it's the midichlorians. This was a huge issue when The Phantom Menace came out. You know, and we'd never heard about these things known as the midichlorians. And, you know, Qui-Gon's the first one to mention them. And, you know, the midichlorians to me, you know, they're basically, you know, as he describes them, they're a, you know, symbiotic organism that, you know, communes with human beings who are Force-sensitive, telling them the will of the Force. I actually just started reading the Darth Plagueis novel last night. And it has already a few interesting takes on the midichlorians. I'm not very far into the book, so I'm really excited to see if they explore more with that. They actually had some interesting things to say about it. The way they kind of described it in the book, more so than the film, is it's kind of like it's part of, you know, the human organism that helps commune with the Force. But to me, the issue with the midichlorians, the reason I don't like the midichlorians, but again, I don't think they kill Phantom Menace or kill Star Wars for me, because again, it seems like maybe there was enough uproar in 99 that George Lucas never mentioned them again, really. So you know, we only really hear about them in Episode 1. But the problem with me is only I think it takes away and from, you know, a little bit of the sacredness of the Force, the mystery of the Force. I'm not sure exactly what George Lucas's idea was behind the midichlorians. I think to some extent the positive in it is I think it's a nice way to try to bridge this, you know, the mystery of the Force with maybe the biology of the Force, the fact that, you know, there is some reasonable or rationality to the Force. But I think at the same time, the Force is essentially it's like faith. It's there. It's something you believe in. It's something that the, you know, especially with Luke Skywalker, you know, Luke Skywalker's journey would become much less interesting and inviting to us as a character development if it was just simply, you know, he's learning how to commune better with this organism within himself rather than this mysterious power, this mysterious essence that surrounds him. So I think the midichlorians kind of take away from that greater mystery that is the Force. I think to some extent it's good because it tries to make it a little bit more realistic. Maybe, okay, this is something rational. This helps give credibility to the Force. But at the same time, it takes too much away from it, in my opinion. But what do you think, Jason?
Well, I'm definitely of the side that subscribes to Yoda's view of the Force. You know, it's energy that surrounds us and binds us, you know. And like we've mentioned before, and not to annoy any of you that find our continuous references to religion obnoxious, but the Force is very much the religious aspect to Star Wars in many ways. And I think it's one of those things where so many people wanted to know more about the Force. What is it? How does it work? That George Lucas was like, okay, well, here, this is how it works. And people went, oh, that's how it works? That's not what I was wanting. And I was thinking about it earlier today, and I want to sort of look at it this way. If you're a religious person and you pray a lot and you pray and you want to, you know, commune with God or whatever, and you want to, you know something or things like that, and you pray very devoutly and very seriously, and you do get something. You feel like you've heard something or learned something from God or the Bible or something that jumps out and speaks to you. If you got some sort of a receipt for that at the end of it, would that make as much of a difference to you, much of an impact to you as if it was just this experience I don't think so. So, I mean, it's at the end of the day, I think it's almost like somebody wanted some sort of solid proof that this actually transpires. So, you know, some sort of thing that you can touch or see. And the Force, in my opinion, and what I like to envision the Force, isn't something that you just touch and see. It's something that you have to experience and feel and just embrace, because it is a leap of faith, as Luke finds out. And I don't think getting a receipt at the end of a prayer would be much of a leap of faith. So that's my little analogy there for you.
Yeah, that's a very good analogy. Could use you in my classroom. I could use a break. Want to come in? but yeah, no, I think that's great. Very well said, as always. You know, it's the midichlorians are just you know, to some extent it is. It's maybe George Lucas's response to the fans' inquiries. You know, what is the Force? Can we what more can we learn about it? And maybe this is that attempt to teach us a little bit more. But at the same time, you know, sometimes, you know, be careful what you ask for. You know. We didn't like
exactly.
It. And that's fine. Again, like I said, it's not really mentioned much beyond that. And I don't even think, you know, to a certain degree, you know, it doesn't kill the Force, but the Force essentially is. I mean, it's something mysterious. It's something that you must put faith in. You must believe in it. You must experience it. You know, the will of the Force can't just be, you know, oh, these midichlorians are working correctly now in your system, and here you go. Here's the blueprint of how the Force wants you to go about your life or whatever. No, it's you know, you have to listen to the movements of the Force and follow it. It's much more experiential, like you said, you know, rather than something that you figure out in your bones or figure out, you know, through an algorithm or whatnot. So that's my opinion of the midichlorians. So
yeah, it is only mentioned. Primarily in the one scene, you know, I mean, mentioned briefly earlier on in The Phantom Menace, but only dwelt upon really in the one scene. And it wasn't dwelt upon very long. So it's not something that takes away from my enjoyment of the films or the way I view the Force, because I almost sort of just bypass that mentally at this point. Not completely bypass it, because it's there now in Star Wars, and you know, you have to always remember there's these midichlorians. But it's almost, I almost look at it as Qui-Gon has a different theory on the Force than Yoda does. You know, how people have different theories for various topics and things like that. You know, it's so Qui-Gon has this this theory. Very physical theory, and Yoda takes this, since he's lived 900 years, he takes this more spiritual side to the Force. You know, that's my take. You know, maybe there's different theories on the Force in Star Wars, and they're both getting taught, you know. Who knows?
Yeah, sure.
So that's how I mentally rationalize. So,
yeah. Well, what about you, Jason? What else sticks out to you as a fan controversy?
Well, and this one may make me slightly unpopular, because of my opinion on Jar Jar. Jar Jar Binks. We're, you know, talking about some more stuff from The Phantom Menace here, but. I know a lot of people see Jar Jar Binks and they think, oh, he's so annoying. Why does he have to do that? He's so obnoxious, you know. And I've heard, you know, various complaints about him and things like that. And, you know, some people say, oh, George Lucas was using him as the Chewbacca for The Phantom Menace, you know. And I'm like, well, not really. But I'm very much, as I've mentioned in previous podcasts, I do like Jar Jar Binks a lot. And I mentioned last podcast where that all started, when I was 10, when I saw, it was 10 or 11 when I saw The Phantom Menace, and I identified with Jar Jar because I was clumsy and out of place. And not to mention, I thought he was hilarious. And so I identified with him. And upon growing up, I actually sort of grew up with Jar Jar going into Attack of the Clones because he took more of a bigger responsibility role in that film as being part of the Senate. And at that point in my life, I was getting involved in Boy Scouts and things like that and taking more responsibility that way. So I sort of grew up with Jar Jar. And I was very disappointed that he had, like, no lines in Revenge of the Sith. But the movie was great in general, so it probably was better that he didn't have too much to say because of the emotional content of that film. But I do have some more deeper reasons why I think Jar Jar is a good character in the films, but I want to hear some of your thoughts on Jar Jar first before I delve into that.
Yeah, sure. No, I can't stand Jar Jar. I think he's the dumbest character ever in Star Wars. You know, I know that language is a bit harsh, and I know, Jason, you're not the only one who likes Jar Jar. There's probably quite a few of our listeners that enjoy him. And I like what you have to say, and I don't disrespect anything you say. You know, the fact that you could identify with him, that's great. I couldn't identify with him at all, so maybe that's part of the reason why. I just find him out of place, though. That's my problem with Jar Jar. I've heard that argument as well, that, you know, it's kind of George Lucas's attempt at another Chewbacca character. I don't think that's necessarily true, though. He's a much more involved character than Chewbacca was. I don't think that was George Lucas's attempt at all. My issues with Jar Jar, you know, there's the character himself, and there's also the CGI. I don't think the CGI is quite seamless at the time. He doesn't have the physicality that I remember from, like, Yoda and Empire Strikes Back and Return of the Jedi. That's a separate issue that I'll mention a little bit later, some of my issues with the CGI. But Jar Jar, just as a character, he just seems so out of place. Star Wars has always had a bit of a more serious feel to me. I mean, there are some comedic moments. You know, R2 and 3PO definitely supply some comedic relief. You know, Han Solo definitely has some witty one-liners, and Yoda certainly can be very funny at times. But I think Jar Jar, it's almost an attempt to have, like, a strictly comedic character. You know, he almost reminded me of a really goofy, you know, Inspector Gadget, for those of you who don't know who that is, you know, was this silly police investigator who always screwed everything up yet always managed to solve the case. You know, Jar Jar's involvement in the Battle of Naboo, you know, he doesn't really know what the heck he's doing, yet he somehow manages to help win the battle, and I don't know, I just found that a bit childish. My little bit of appreciation for the character, and this is as far as it will go for my appreciation of Jar Jar, is I think for children, you know, of course, you know, I'm much older now, and I wasn't even super young when I saw the film. I mean, I was 14. That type of humor and that type of comedy was already lost to me. And it just didn't feel right in Star Wars. It felt so forced. It felt so out of place. I mean, and he's constantly in scenes with Qui-Gon and Obi-Wan, and Qui-Gon and Obi-Wan have this seriousness to them. I mean, they're Jedi. They're like how you expect a Jedi to be. And then there's Jar Jar, who's just this god-awful character who just tries to make everything silly, and I can't get behind him. You know, I hate to admit this for those of you who like Jar Jar, and certainly no judgment on you, but get rid of Jar Jar, and I think Episode 1 is probably the best prequel film. Jar Jar just absolutely takes so much away from that movie for me, personally. Again, it's just because he just doesn't fit. When I think of Star Wars, I don't think of a silly comedian amphibian. You know, I think of characters with some type of depth. And yeah, and I'll be very interested to hear what you have to say about, you know, that your in-depth comments about Jar Jar. I don't see a tremendous amount of depth in him. And you know, I understand what his purpose is for the film, and you know, he's a light character, and you know, he's supposed to be silly, but to me, he's just obnoxious, and he gets in the way. So that's my opinion of Jar Jar. So, Jason, why don't you go ahead and say what it is you like so much about him?
Oh, yes, my defense of Jar Jar Binks. Well, first of all, I do want to say I don't think he was used quite properly. As someone who has, you know, been studying to be an actor, and I like trying to take apart director choices at times, I don't think he was used quite properly. First of all, as a comedic character, he needs somebody to play off of and bounce, you know, these funny moments off of. And he doesn't have a stable person to do that with. I mean, Qui-Gon and Obi-Wan, yeah, but they're all just stick in the muds because they're Jedi, and it's not someone that can really... you can really appreciate the humor bouncing off of. You know, sometimes he's there with R2, sometimes he's there with Anakin. He's one half to a comedic duo trying to do both parts because he doesn't have someone there to do it with him. And I think that's one way that they used him well in the Clone Wars, especially season one with Bombad Jedi, where he and C-3PO were together. I thought that was a good duo. But as far as the comedic points, he is a little out of place because he doesn't have the straight man there with him. Because, you know, Qui-Gon and Obi-Wan aren't comedic straight men. They just aren't. They're Jedi. They're very serious. And I think the biggest reason why George Lucas, and I've looked at this every which way because... growing up, I've always loved Jar Jar, and it just shocked me that people didn't like him. When I first started hearing all of these people saying how horrible he was and things like that, it just shocked me. And so I thought long and hard about this, and I've really analyzed Jar Jar. And I think the reason why Jar Jar is there, especially in The Phantom Menace, when you have a New Hope, you follow R2 and 3PO. They're who you're on this adventure with. They're the ones telling this story. And they tell the story basically through the entire original trilogy because one or the other is either there or very close to the action at some point in time. And I think George Lucas is going to try and do that with Jar Jar with the prequel trilogies. It was going to be Jar Jar and Anakin. Especially in The Phantom Menace, that he was trying to tell their story through their eyes. Because it is a whole new experience in Star Wars, you know, all this galactic politics and, you know, fantasy stuff. And, you know, maybe some people feel out of place there. So he put this clumsy, you know, out of place character in these refined atmospheres so that we could, you know, maybe sort of identify with that. I don't know if it was done quite properly. I think most of the gripes I have with Jar Jar is that he wasn't used right. And then as far as Jar Jar as a character, he's a very innocent character. Yes, he's bumbling, and he's the buffoon that means well. There's a lot of those types of characters throughout mythology and, you know, stories. You know, he's the jester, you know, who... means well and is clumsy, but in the end helps to save the day. But I think more than that, more important than that is the innocence he brings to it. It's sort of the lost innocence that we have as a culture, I think. And he only really sees the good in people. That's his greatest asset and his greatest downfall, especially in Attack of the Clones, because all he wants to do is help Padme and Anakin and Obi-Wan, but in doing that, he's manipulated into giving Chancellor Palpatine these emergency powers to create and start the war. So it's, you know, that's... he's such an innocent character and an innocent person that I think more than that, that is the core of what Jar Jar is. And it's not this bumbling, you know, buffoon, and it's not that. I think that's the reason why I like Jar Jar so much, is because of the innocence of Jar Jar Binks. I know I've gone on long-winded, and some people probably have gone, will he ever stop? you know, this tail is as long as Jar Jar's tongue. Will he just shut up already? But so that's but yes, that's that is my defense of Jar Jar, and I probably could talk more about that, but I won't at this point. So it's Jar Jar, I think, ultimately has a place, but it's because the droids aren't as focused on in the prequel trilogy as the original trilogy, I think Jar Jar was supposed to sort of fill some of that void. Whether or not he was used properly in that, you make the call.
Yeah, no, I appreciate what you just said, though, Jason. I mean, I think that's a really great way of looking at it. And, you know, I think for a lot of people that don't like him, you know, we just look at him on the surface, and he's just kind of, he is kind of initially just this bumbling buffoon and a bit annoying, making it automatically kind of difficult to see beneath that. You know, and I'm always yelling at my kids, or I was always arguing with people in grad school and whatnot. You know, whenever you have someone who disagrees with your opinion of something, at least be willing to listen. And I think you had a lot of great points there. And I think if Jar Jar maybe had been used correctly, he could have been a great character. I like what you said. You know, I mean, he does represent that innocence who's just simply trying to help. He constantly makes mistakes. And he, you know, he becomes a reject because of his mistakes. I think, you know, if maybe you're right. Like, maybe if he'd just been, you know, portrayed better as a character, used better as a character, maybe he could have added a lot to the film. I think, you know, if that were the case, the only other thing I you know, they need to change is just his voice. I mean, that voice is just obnoxious. but yeah, I really appreciate what you had to say. I mean, he certainly does bring something to the films that I think everyone that does hate him is incapable of seeing simply because we're not willing to look beneath the surface. I really like what you had to say, and, you know, hopefully, it'll help me see a little bit beneath that surface next time. And you know, he's not overused either, which is great. You know, he plays a pivotal role in episode 2. It's just to me the most annoying thing is just the way he speaks. You know, Yoda has a funny way of speaking, but he's so wise that, you know, it's easy to accept it. There's just something about, maybe it's Jar Jar's own mannerisms that, you know, just take something away from him. But, you know, I think that's enough about Jar Jar.
Just remember, everybody, beneath that rubbery skin beats a heart like you and me. So.
Misa called Jar Jar Binks. Misa, your humble servant. That won't be necessary.
Misa called Jar Jar Binks. Misa, your humble servant.
God, you're amazing.
yeah, thank you.
Jason, when you get famous, when you get to go on and be a voice actor, you know, on the Clone Wars, and you get to hang out with Cat Tabor, don't forget me, okay? Anywho, we digress.
We do.
But no, yeah, that's good. So, you know, maybe, you know, for those of you who don't like Jar Jar, listen to what Jason has to say. He's got some good points. And for those of you who do love Jar Jar, don't hate me, please. yeah, so just a couple of, did you want to bring up something else now, Jason, or do you want me to go into something else now?
I think this would be a good time to just sort of give general good and bad perceptions on the prequels.
Sure.
You know, just general ideas on the prequels. I love them. I think they're great. I think they add immensely to the story of Star Wars. Without the prequels, the original trilogy is still a great story because it is very self-contained. But with the prequels, you lay the groundwork and the background for the entire original trilogy, which makes the original trilogy even more impactful and more powerful as a story. And then, of course, there are the elements of, you know, all the six films fitting together. But in general, I think the prequels bring a whole lot to the experience of Star Wars. And without them, the original trilogy is just a fairy tale. But with the prequels, the original trilogy is a redemption story that has lasting impact, in my opinion. So,
yeah, I like that. You know, you said you love the prequels. I would say I really like the prequels. I'm always a little hesitant to say that I love them. And it's not because I don't like them. I really do enjoy them a lot. And for a lot of the same reasons you just said. And, you know, I think maybe the biggest issue I have with the prequels is kind of what you were saying with Jar Jar. Maybe I don't think they were as well made as the originals. That's where some of my issues come up with the prequels. It's not that I don't like the prequels. It's a great story. It finishes our story. Like you said, you know, episodes 4 through 6, you know, you could have made those films. George Lucas could have never come back and done anything. And those films would have still been, you know, legends for centuries. They would have been great. It would have been a great story. But I think, like you said, you know, we're given so much more depth by introducing the prequels. We get to learn, you know, it becomes a tragedy and a redemption story, which is so much more. I mean, the story of Luke Skywalker is great. It's the story of a hero. But it's, you know, it's nothing necessarily new. I think by adding the story of Anakin, it becomes a story about the tragic fall of somebody. And as far as character development goes, I mean, you can't beat the character development of Anakin Skywalker. I mean, heck, we did a 2-part episode just on that. So we
exactly.
We obviously love that stuff. But, you know, let me just mention briefly what I don't like about the prequels. That way, you know, it's always good to say the bad and finish with the good. And I will say that the good far outweighs the bad. The only thing I don't like about the prequels is I think they're overly reliant on CGI. I think that there's almost too much going on, that it's like George Lucas is trying so hard to push the envelope technologically like he had in the 70s and 80s. But it's still something new. I mean, CGI is still new. I mean, it's a new forum. I felt like a lot of stuff from episode 2 just looked like a really, really, really classy computer game, in my opinion. I think the Battle of Geonosis is awesome, but, you know, it didn't have the realism of, like, the Battle of Endor, because obviously it's not, you know, people running around in costumes. You know, that's one thing is I just... Yeah, go ahead.
I'll grant you that. I guess I'm just much, I'm much more forgiving fan than most. And I guess, you know, I watched it at the exact perfect age because I was able to just be like, oh my gosh, it looks amazing. Oh my gosh, look at that. Oh my gosh, look at that way back there. Look at that detail. You know, there's so much going on. What's over there? What's over here? But I do think that maybe I do agree that maybe it was a little too reliant. And now that I'm older and I've been able to, you know, act on stage and act in more plays and things like that, and I think I would have appreciated if some of that stuff, maybe not huge amounts of it, but some of it was more... real, more actual substance than just computer computer-generated eye candy. So, my favorite part, my favorite moment of the prequel trilogy, I will mention this, is the arena battle on Geonosis, simply because I just love all the Jedi action. And that is something I have repeatedly gone through frame by frame by frame by frame on my DVD just to look at everything because it is so amazing. And without the CGI, it couldn't have been that incredible. I guess I'm almost talking out of both sides of my mouth with this, but I do think that some of the things would have been better off. Maybe some of the characters would have been better off as puppets or people in costume rather than complete digital characters. So,
yeah, right, absolutely. You know, again, it's the CGI in some senses is fantastic in the films, and like you know, like I mentioned, it really does push the envelope, and you know, is going to set up films like Avatar for later on. But I think the only issue then is you know when you're pushing that envelope, you're kind of letting the storytelling and the character development fall a little bit to the wayside, and you know you get a lot of the flash and the panache, but you kind of miss out on you know just the old school storytelling. It's almost like there's so much going on that it's hard to stay focused on the story itself. But that's enough about that. The only other thing I would mention is as far as you know, obviously making the prequels not, in my opinion, quite as good as the original trilogy is just the acting. And lots of people are going to obviously pick up on that. I think the acting is a bit subpar. And that I think it's a combination of the actors as well as the script writing. You know, the scripts are not the strongest. But then again, you know, even a lot of the lines in the original trilogy are a little bit cheesy, especially, you know, some of the romance scenes in Empire with Han and Leia. They're very cheesy, but they do a very convincing job of acting it. Whereas, let's just be honest, Hayden Christensen is probably not the best actor by any stretch of the means. You know, the one thing I loved about Hayden Christensen is I think he's a great physical actor. You can see his pain. You can see the inner turmoil in his face and in his facial expressions. I think he does that stuff exceptionally well. I love him for that stuff. It's just as soon as he opens his mouth in so many instances, it's like, ooh, I just cringe just a little bit. But not everywhere. You know, again, he does a great job in certain parts, but I think overall it's just such a flat performance. And even from Natalie Portman, who's a fantastic actress, there's just so many scenes where they're just so flat. You just don't, you know, you don't necessarily believe them. They're just not overly convincing.
Yeah.
But, and that's really it for what takes away for me from the prequels.
I do want to make comment just a little bit on this. That is something I will grant you as well from the prequels. Is the acting, and as someone who is an actor, I look at some of that stuff sometimes and I go, oh my gosh, you know, why is there's no energy here? There's no chemistry going on. There's nobody's playing off of each other. And I go back to something that Mark Hamill said in, I believe it was the Empire of Dreams documentary that's on the DVD. But he was saying when he first read the script for the auditions for A New Hope, he was like, you know, I don't know what all this stuff, I don't even know what they're talking about. So I'm just going to read it sincerely. And I think that's one reason why he pulled Luke off so well is once that all got going, he was able to, you know, find out, you know, all the backstory and everything. And by Return of the Jedi, they were very set. But going into it, just being able to give the lines sincerely and with feeling that, you know, the character thinks this is important, whether or not I understand it or not, whether or not I think the lines are good or not, doesn't matter. The character thinks this is important. This is what the character is saying. So that's something that Mark Hamill was able to pull off, and I don't think some of the prequel actors were able to do that. Obviously, Attack of the Clones and the love scenes between Anakin and Padme are the biggest examples of that. Hayden probably thought the lines were very corny and was probably uncomfortable saying some of them, and that showed. So that's, as an actor, that's sort of the perspective I take on that. So,
well, who better than an actor to discuss that, huh? That's what I say. but you know, some of the things, and so let me flip now kind of to what I like about it, and also my response to some of, you know, so, you know, what we just mentioned here, and actually, well, is there anything in particular that stands out to you that I haven't mentioned that you don't necessarily care for when it comes to the prequels, Jason, before I say what I want to say?
Not anything else that really jumps out. Like I said, I'm of the camp that I love the prequels. It was the prequels that launched me from an excited fan to a super nerd. So, and without them, I would not be hosting a podcast today. So, I will leave a lot of the objections to the prequels to other people, because I'm very much accepting of a lot of the stuff that happens in that. So, I will grant people certain quibbles and disagreements and points, but overall it doesn't really bother me. So, but you had things that you wanted to address on the good side, on the flip side.
Sure, yeah. And before I do, you know, again, there are so many things out there that, you know, people despise about the prequels in the fan community. And my only issue with that is, again, I don't have issues with people disliking aspects of the prequels. I mean, there is a lot about the prequels that I'm not crazy about. I mean, again, I kind of hit the big ones. I think like Jar Jar, midichlorians, too much CGI, you know, kind of poor acting, and not necessarily the greatest script writing. But all that aside, like I said, I do really, really like the prequels. But it's, I don't have a problem with people not liking them. The thing that bothers me though is, you know, when they, you know, they start to hate Star Wars just because of these films. That just doesn't make sense to me. I don't get why you would despise these films all because of this. I think some people are oversensitive about the prequels, and they don't give it the time of day. I will admit that there is a very different feel to the prequels than there is to the original trilogy. When I sit down and watch one of the prequels, I have a different feeling than I do when I sit down and watch the original trilogy. I think a lot of that's in part because of the fact that I grew up on the original trilogy. And I think a lot of other fans, you know, those who grew up on the original trilogy, they have a different feeling, and you have a different nostalgic feeling that connects you to when you were a youth and when you first fell in love with Star Wars, which, you know, automatically, again, like I said earlier, you know, it blocks you off to being able to enjoy the prequels for what they are. And luckily, like I said, I mean, I was very young when I got into Star Wars. And I was still quite young. I mean, I was only 14 when Episode 1 came out. So I was still young when they came out. And I loved the prequels. When the prequels came out in the theaters, actually, I saw the prequels in the theaters way more than I saw the special editions when they came out in 97. I mean, I frequented every prequel at least 4 times. I think I saw Episode 2 7 times in the theaters. I mean, I loved them. And I still love them. All right, I'm going to say I love them. There you go, Jason. You've got me convinced. And I do. I mean, and I do because they're Star Wars. And yes, they are not the original trilogy. They never will be. And when you try to make them that, you're going to be disappointed. Whenever you try to make something into something that it's not, it's a different story. It's a different way of telling that story. And so on the flip side, then, what I love about the prequels is, you know, exactly that. It finishes our story. It makes it into a well-rounded story. You know, I mean, we get the story of Anakin, you know, which we've all wanted to know. And frankly, if you don't like that story, well, don't listen to it, or, you know, too bad. It's not, you know, it is George Lucas's story. He has the right to tell how he wants. And I think he tells it exceptionally well. Again, some of the filmmaking process wasn't the greatest, but the story itself, I can't see anything more perfect, especially for me. The fact that essentially Anakin's fall all depends upon his insecurity about finding love and about finding acceptance, that's so human. There's nothing more human than that. You know, it's not like he's, you know, the original trilogy almost seems to kind of hint that the fact that, you know, he's kind of tempted away into the dark side. Okay, but why? You know, give me a real reason why this guy would be willing to fall from his state of grace. And I think the prequels do that. You know, they make his fall so believable and so identifiable. And not to mention, again, the lightsabers. The lightsaber fights in the prequels blow the original trilogy away. I mean, oh gosh. I mean, not to the Phantom Menace. It's just, it's phenomenal. And, you know, Episode 2 and 3, they have so many awesome duels. And, you know, the Geonosis battle, I mean, it's great. You see, you know, hundreds of Jedi running into, you know, these battle droids, just hacking them up. I mean, these are the things that fans have always wanted to see, and now we get to see them, and it's so great. So again, for me, what I love about the prequels is, again, it really rounds out the story. We learn about Anakin. We can believe Anakin. We can identify with Anakin. And we get to see all those things we've always wanted to see as Star Wars fans. And, you know, it doesn't really leave you wanting for more. The original trilogy, you're like, oh, well, what about this? Well, what about that? When the prequels finish, you're like, I think I've seen it all. I mean, not literally. I mean, granted, the EU is wonderful. I'm not saying the EU is pointless for that reason. But, I mean, when you see those six films together, it's a great story that complement each other so well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, and I've already mentioned that, you know, I love the fact that it completes the story and it completely adds to everything. The prequels are the foundation that the beautiful mansion that the original trilogy stands on. So it's without the prequels, all you have is this house. But with the prequels, you've got this foundation, and it elevates that, and it makes it even better. And some of the two quick points that I just absolutely love about the prequels is the fact that we get to explore the Jedi more. Obviously, in The Empire Strikes Back, we go into more the philosophy of the Force and things like that with Yoda and some of the training. But we get in the prequels, we get to see what the Jedi were like. We get to see how they operate and how skilled they were and things like that. I've always loved the Jedi characters, and ever since Obi-Wan Kenobi gave Luke a lightsaber in A New Hope, I always wanted to know about the others that, you know, were killed. And then the other aspect on the flip side of that, I love the story of Palpatine. Without the prequels, the Emperor at the end of Return of the Jedi is just this little evil man that sits there and cackles. But with the prequels, Palpatine carries so much more weight when you get into Return of the Jedi and his one scene in The Empire Strikes Back. Because Palpatine is what brings down the Jedi and what brings Anakin to the dark side. He is the one that pulls Anakin, that gives Anakin the little tug to fall from grace because of his own insecurities. And so those are the two things that I just really love about the prequels.
Yeah, sure. I agree, you know, and I teach, you know, teach a couple of different classes on theology in high school, and I teach freshmen all year. All we do is the Old Testament, and a lot of the kids say, you know, what do we need the Old Testament for if we're Christian? Like, oh, we don't need this. And like what you said, you know, it's the foundation, though. You can't understand the rest of that book if you don't understand this portion. And, you know, the OT it's great. I mean, it's a great story, but, you know, you really want to know what happened to Anakin. How did the Emperor come to power? I mean, this is the foundation you need to understand these films. I mean, it's what rounds out the characters. Without it, you know, everything's just a bit more shallow. So I think what the prequel trilogy does is it gives greater depth to the Star Wars story. Again, maybe not in the best, not in the best acted way, but that's essentially what they do. And for me, when it comes down to it, the prequels are fun. You know, the original trilogy was fun. That's what I loved about it as a kid. You know, it was fun. It wasn't until I got older that I started to identify with, you know, some of the more, you know, depthier scenes with, like, Luke and Yoda and, you know, all that stuff. All that exposition when I was young, those were the scenes that I could walk out of the room for and then come back for the next fight. I didn't mind. And, you know, when I saw Episode 1, it was fun. I was still 14. But then as I got older, you know, I saw some of, you know, there's not... In a certain sense, there's maybe not as much of those depth scenes that you get in the OT, but the prequels are fun. I mean, you are experiencing Star Wars, and again, and that's essentially why we love Star Wars, is the experience of adventure, and the prequel trilogy does a great job of furthering that adventure. That's what I love about it.
And there's so much room in the prequels to have that adventure, with everything that was expanded on with the Jedi and the Sith and everything, and there's just so much more room now to expand and to play in because of the prequels. So,
absolutely.
That's sort of piggybacking on what we talked about last week, so.
Sure. Well, that's for me, that's enough about the prequels. I mean, we could go on and on about this, and maybe we will some other show. I just wanted to hit some of the big points and just, you know, obviously sympathize with the fact that there is controversy over the prequels, but overall, I think they're integral to the Star Wars story, and to be a Star Wars fan doesn't mean you can only like half the story. You know, perhaps you prefer the OT, and that's fine. I do. I know that there's a lot of people out there that do. But a lot of people also, especially younger people who grew up with the prequel trilogy, they're going to always prefer the prequels. Probably for the same reason I prefer the original trilogy. It's that nostalgic feeling of being a kid. And you can't fault anyone for that, because they're both great stories in and of themselves, and they come together to tell a great story. So
exactly. But let's shift trilogies here for a little bit, shall we?
Let's talk about some of these changes that, you know, we've seen happen to the beloved original trilogy, dating back to 97 with the special editions. But before we jump into that, I just want to mention really quickly how awesome those commercials were back in 97. I don't know if you remember them, Jason, but it always, you know, started
yes.
with a little TV screen, and it said, you know, for generations, you've never experienced, you know, could only experience Star Wars one way, on your television. And then the X-Wing comes flying out of the TV, and it's just like, oh my gosh, yes. And I remember, like, I really started getting into Star Wars, like, in 1995, which it was kind of the perfect time. I mean, I was right around 9 and 10 years old, great age to really start getting into that. 95 was when they started re-releasing action figures, you know, the Power of the Force line. Which, oh, by the way, we need to do something about that line sometime on a show. I love that line of action figures. but I won't digress now, I promise. But, you know, those were coming out in 95, and then you had the special editions come out in 97. Here I was, a fan of just over 2 years. Now I could go see them on the big screen. It was so exciting. You know, that was the biggest hit for me with the release of the special editions. And, you know, for those out there who think George Lucas is nothing but a money-grubbing, you know, fool who just re-releases these films as much as possible to make money, to me, those people are just silly. You know, I love that they keep re-releasing them. Obviously, we're about to see that next week with Episode 1 in 3D. I love when they re-release the films, because I love seeing them on the big screen. I don't care how many times. They could re-release. I would love it if they release one every single year for the rest of my life. I would go see it. I mean, I love them on the big screen. They do it. It's not to put money in his pocket. It's to appease the fans. It's what we want. So, I mean, if you're a fan who's just content watching it on your TV at home, good for you. But I just don't get it. I don't know why you wouldn't want to see him on the big screen.
The original trilogy, I had no concept of Star Wars before the special editions. I was 7 years old when they came out in February of 1997. And I, like I've said before, I had seen two movies in the theaters before. I had seen Lion King. I had seen Toy Story. We went to go see Star Wars, and I, you know, on the drive to the theater, my parents said, yeah, we're going to go see this movie. It came out like along when we were kids, and we really liked it. And my mom was a huge Star Wars fan in 1977, seeing it 11 times in 1 year at the same theater.
That's devotion.
So I had it on. Yes. So, I had it on good authority that this was a good movie. But I had no idea what to expect going into it. And funny story, 2 weeks before we saw the film, we were at Walmart going through like the sporting goods section to look for something, and somebody had left one of the Micro Machine sets for the Star Wars, you know, one of the Star Wars Micro Machine sets on a shelf there, and it was a toy, so I went over and I picked it up and I was looking at it and I was like, what is this? What is Star Wars? I set it down and I said, I'll never like Star Wars. 2 weeks later, I go see the movie and my life has changed. So, so much for that. But so that was my introduction to Star Wars, was the special editions. And my mom didn't give me like hardly any spoilers going into it, so I had no idea what to expect. So I was like, everything was amazing from start to finish, and I think my mouth was, you know, my jaw dropped to my lap for the entire film. So, there we go.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, so maybe we can look into a little bit of, you know, so I think the reason people do complain when they're re-released is because, you know, there's always some new change that somebody's got to complain about. So I'm just going to mention a few of the changes we've seen happen since 97. You know, we had the special editions in 97, then we saw some more tweaking with them in 2004 when the DVDs came out. And then again, this, you know, just this past year in 2011 when the Blu-rays came out. I'm just going to mention a few of those. There's so many. We don't need to talk about all of them. So I'm just going to mention a few that I really liked. There's really only one that I really hate, so I'm going to obviously mention that one. But might as well just go in order. So with A New Hope, the one, so I'll mention, because there's quite a few to A New Hope. I think A New Hope has the most changes, especially when it comes to the special editions. You know, we see a lot more of Mos Eisley. And you know, we get some more things on the Death Star, but it all really evolves around Mos Eisley. And so let's start with the big one, Han shot first. Okay. This is one that I don't know of any fan who says, oh my gosh, I love how Han shot second. I think if anybody said that, oh man, it would be like yelling, I love the Yankees in Fenway Park. Bad news. you know. So the reason I don't like this particular scene, and I'm sure this is a lot of people's arguments, nothing original to me, and I know, Jason, you probably have something to say about it too, is, you know, I know George Lucas's reason for changing it. He says, you know, I didn't want Han Solo to look like a bad guy. You know, he's shooting first. He's, you know, this smuggler. It makes him look bad. But I think that's why it's so good, because, again, it gives the depth to Han's redemptive character. I mean, Han is... When we first meet Han, he's an individual. Leave him alone. He lives his own life. He does everything for the money. He'll kill people if he has to. He is the most selfish character we meet in when we first, you know, watch Star Wars. So I think that purpose adds so much to his character by, you know, he shoots first and he'll ask questions later. And that adds so much more to how we see him develop into this selfless character who creates a community of friends, and he's willing to die for those friends. So that's why I like it so much. And not to mention the fact that it looks bad. I mean, the digital editing of it just looks awkward. I don't buy it. So, but that's my take on that. What about you, Jason?
Well, this one may make me slightly unpopular too, but to coin a Shakespearean phrase, I really honestly think it's Much Ado About Nothing. And I don't mean to offend anybody or step on anybody's feelings about that. You're welcome to your opinions. I'm glad you have them. But I honestly don't think it's as big of a deal as everyone makes it out to be. First of all, going into the film, first movie I'd ever seen where people shoot each other. So obviously full of that in the first scene, opening scene. So I was already aware of that going into this scene. So when Greedo walks up to Han Solo, I never got the feeling that Han Solo was in trouble. I never got the feeling Han Solo was actually concerned for his life. So I always thought Greedo was kind of an idiot in the first place. Second, we see Han going for his blaster anyway. He's going to shoot no matter what. So I don't know how much that really actually changes Han's character, because he's going to shoot him anyway. We already see the shots where he's pulling the blaster out of his holster. So I don't know how that really affects Han's character. And then this is where I think people are going to not like me. This is my reasoning for why Greedo misses from across the table, and why it's not a big deal. Because I like thinking, I like trying to put myself in the character's perspective and logically think it through. Maybe this was a mistake. How does it actually work in real life? And since you can't tell where Greedo is looking because of those giant weird eyes, My rationale for why he misses from across the table. First of all, he's a lousy shot to begin with. He's an idiot to begin with. Second, he probably glances down with his eyes and notices Hans pulling his blaster out and is about to shoot him. So he jerks and tries to shoot first. And instead of squeezing the trigger like you're supposed to, he jerks the trigger and causes the blaster to jerk to the side and miss. That's my, as Han shoots him and kills him, that's my reasoning and rationale for why that happened. So I don't know if I'm really making any friends there. I don't know if I'm smoothing over any hard feelings there at all, but that's my rationale for it. And I really don't think it's as big of a deal as everybody makes it out to be. Yeah. Like I said again, I don't want to step on anybody's opinions and invalidate anybody's opinions and feelings on that scene, but I really don't think it's as big of a deal as some people make it out to be.
Yeah. No, I agree. I think a lot of the changes, even the ones I don't like, you know, again, I personally don't care for this one, but I agree. It's not that big a deal. It doesn't take it away. It doesn't really I'm not going to stop watching it because of that. It's not a big deal. But enough of that one. The only other one I want to mention from A New Hope, and this is the one that I love, is the Jabba the Hutt sequence in the spaceport in Mos Eisley. I absolutely love this scene. I think it's awesome. We learn a little bit more about, you know, why Han Solo has to be worried. I mean, here's Jabba right at the foot of his ship with, you know, an armed gang ready to take on Han. You know, Han would be in trouble. I love that scene. It really adds so much to Han's character. We get a sense of, you know, the fact that he's really upset Jabba. But we also get to see them as, you know, they had a working relationship. Jabba, you know, gives him a pass. He's like, okay, I'll let you go this one time, but you're going to pay me back extra. And I really liked that scene a lot.
I did too. You know, like I said, growing up, this is the first time I've ever seen Star Wars, so I grew up thinking that this was how it was supposed to be. So it was, you know, going back and finding out that, well, that scene wasn't actually even in the movie originally, and some people didn't like it, was a little confusing to me. But I thought it was great exposition for Han's character, and the fact that he's probably very concerned and very worried going into that because, you know, Jabba's there with, you know, all these bounty hunters and Boba Fett. Great little cameo, by the way, in my opinion. Mm. And who cares if George Lucas just put him in there just for the fanboys? It doesn't matter to me. It's awesome that George would give us more screen time for Boba Fett. But as far as the scene is concerned, it gives Han the ability to try and convince everybody else around him that he's really not concerned about this. You know, he's got it all under control. He can talk to the mob boss like he's like their old pals. And, you know, he really is that smooth of a guy. He really is that that bold and brash that he doesn't have to grovel. So I just thought it was great. And, you know, maybe it is a bit redundant exposition at times, but I don't think it's a bad scene at all. I think it's good. I do think that some of the Jabba CGI in it is a little weird. It doesn't even really match Jabba from The Phantom Menace, which I thought was pretty good CGI for Jabba. So if they just used the Jabba from The Phantom Menace and put that into A New Hope, I would think that would be fine. Transition going into Return of the Jedi, but some of the CGI they used in that scene was a little odd.
I agree. Yeah, that's the only thing that I don't care for. Again, it doesn't kill the scene for me, but I just find it odd the way Jabba in Return of the Jedi looks so drastically different than he does from the one in A New Hope. And it's like, it's only 3 years later. Why does he look so much different? It's just weird. I don't know why they couldn't have gotten him to look more like he did in Jedi. But, hey, it is what it is. So, anyway. Anything else you wanted to mention from A New Hope, Jason?
Only that I think that the changes that were made as far as the space battle at the end of the film are necessary and phenomenal.
Oh, yes. So. I think those are probably the best done of all of the changes that we've seen. I think they add so much to that space battle. So I would agree with you there.
So Empire Strikes Back.
Yeah, Empire, there's not a ton. Of course, we get to see our beloved Wampa, which is nice.
Yes, yes.
But other than that, you know, we don't really see not that much, you know, and there's nothing in there that – there's nothing in Empire that I didn't like. The only thing that I just saw as unnecessary is, you know, when the scene where later Vader goes to the Executor, I didn't see any purpose of that scene. But again, I don't care. I'm not going to be like, oh my gosh, that's so dumb. No, it's fine. I just don't see it as necessary. There is the one big scene, and you're the one who you thought of it. I did not, so I'm going to let you go ahead and jump in with that.
Yeah, well, this was actually made for the DVD release, and that was when Vader goes to speak with the Emperor, and they changed out the Emperor. They put Ian McDiarmid in to Empire Strikes Back. And I think that is one of the best changes made to the original trilogy, period. Because Palpatine and Ian McDiarmid are inseparable. There is no disputing that fact. Ian McDiarmid is the Emperor. He is the only one that can really, truly deliver that on screen. And so putting him in to the film for the DVD release was the best change that they have made to the original trilogy, period, in my opinion.
Yeah, I agree. Putting the Emperor, Ian McDiarmid, in, I think, you know, it looks great. He looks exactly like he did in Return of the Jedi, which I think is awesome. Because, like you said, yeah, I mean, that was a change for the DVDs in 2004. But I mean, it's so cool what they can do with makeup. I mean, he looks exactly the same as he did in Return of the Jedi, which was made, you know, jeepers, 11 years before that, or no, excuse me, 21 years before that. I mean, unbelievable. And you know, I like the language of it too. The way they, you know, they changed the dialogue. The dialogue is much more fitting.
Yeah,
they
extended it.
Yeah, it just melds perfectly.
It does. Mm-hmm. It does. It really helps that scene, that change. Not only putting Ian McDiarmid in there works, but the dialogue works, and it helps to connect the two trilogies as part of one cohesive story, which is. Which is why it's the best change. So it brings so much. Not only is it great to look at and great to experience as far as, you know, enjoying the acting performance, but it builds the story up as a whole. So that's why it is the best change.
Absolutely. So one thing I wanted to mention from Jedi, but before I do, because I'll probably talk for a minute about this. Is there anything you want to mention though from Return of the Jedi, or is what you want to mention just what I wanted to mention, but take the opposite of opinion?
Well, I will do that, but there is one little thing, one little change that I find that I like that I find people's disagreement with kind of confusing. Not that their disagreement is invalid. I just don't understand it. And that's the Sarlacc, pit. The adding extra tentacles and the beak. Maybe some of the digital doesn't quite fit. At least in the special edition, I think it's more seamless as far as the DVD release. And I haven't seen the Blu-ray, so I can't comment on that. But I don't see any problem with it. I think it makes it a more menacing monster than just a hole in the dirt. So I don't understand some of people's quibbles about the Sarlacc. So,
sure.
Do you have the opposite view?
No, I that's one I'm absolutely indifferent about. I could care less one way or the other. If they hadn't added the beak, I would have liked it. Adding the beak doesn't. I don't dislike it. The only thing I don't like is like kind of what you just mentioned. You know, the CGI could maybe have been a little bit better, but I don't care. I see that, and that I almost overlook that. That's how much I could care less about it, and not in the sense of like, oh, you know, like care less, like, oh, I have no feeling about this. But it's just I don't. I mean, to me, that's just it's nothing. It's not a big deal. But right. What is a big deal for me? Oh, sorry, were you gonna say something?
Well, I was going to go ahead and launch into this change here because there is some sort of a buildup before it that we might want to discuss first, and that's the end celebration of Return of the Jedi. I think it's really nice with a special edition and then expanded on in the DVD release that at the end they go to other planets, and they view the celebration across the galaxy, and they, you know, added in Coruscant, and then with the DVD they added Naboo and things like that, and it just I find it very nice to see a galaxy-wide celebration going on, and apparently I didn't know this until like 3 or 4 years after I'd seen the film that there was originally different music for the closing scenes of Return of the Jedi, but I like the music the way it is now. So I don't know if you want to comment on that before we get to the real meat of your irk here.
I also liked the change to the end of Return of the Jedi as well that they did in the special edition. And yeah, that's funny you say you didn't know there was a different music. The Yub Nub, that was the name of the song, Yub Nub from 1983. I always enjoyed that. I like that song, but I far enjoy the new one that they've added since 97 much, much more. And the reason I do is simply because, I mean, I like Yub Nub. It's a cute song. It's a fun song, but it's not the last song I want to hear in Star Wars.
Exactly.
That's why I liked the change because it's a very powerful piece. It's a very moving piece, and to me, it wraps up the Star Wars saga much better than Yub Nub. Yub Nub again, great song, but it's not necessary. It's not needed, and I loved the ending music so much more. And you know, seeing all the other places again, it's a little bit campy, but I do like it because you know to me, it kind of connects great with, you know, earlier in the film when 3PO is explaining the story, you know, the story so far to the Ewok elders. It's so great. Now we see all those scenes and, you know, to remind us of, you know, where our heroes have been and the effects of what our heroes have done isn't just here on Endor. It's spread across the galaxy. And my favorite place, of course, was Coruscant. I mean, in 97, that's the first time you'd ever seen Coruscant. And, you know, and then in the DVDs and Blu-rays, they added the Jedi Temple in the background, which is so cool because
And the
Senate building, right. And they also add Naboo, which I think is great because it connects all the films. What it does is it shows that the impact of this story has affected everywhere we've ever been, which I really like. Again, a little campy, but I really appreciate it. The only thing I don't like, and this is the only change to the original trilogy that I really just can't stand. It's substituting Hayden Christensen for Sebastian Shaw as Anakin Skywalker. Now, I've heard lots, you know, I've heard George Lucas's argument. I've heard other people's arguments as to why they do like it and why they think it is necessary. I don't mean to be arrogant, but there's no way you can convince me that this is a good change. And the reason I say that, and I know I've mentioned this in the past, so I don't, you know, I'm not going to go over the top. The only reason I don't like it is because what it does for me is it undoes everything that Luke just did and that Vader just did. when Vader is redeemed as Anakin Skywalker, he's not Hayden Christensen. He's that old man. He's that 50-year-old man that threw Sidious down the chasm in the second Death Star. You know, when that happens, Anakin comes out of the ashes of Vader. And, you know, George Lucas says, well, the last time he was purely good, he was purely Anakin, was, you know, before he fell to the dark side. That's bogus. If that's the truth, then he was not redeemed at that point. It makes no sense to me. That's why I have such an issue with it, because, again, Star Wars, to me, one of the biggest themes is redemption. And, you know, I don't see his character being redeemed by going back to Hayden Christensen. It undoes everything Luke just did, and that's why I cannot stand that change. So, go ahead. Yeah. Disagree.
Well, I do concede, as far as arguments go, that yours is the better argument. However, my opinion is more of an aesthetic and overarching, maybe not overarching story, but an overall connecting one. And I just like the way it looks, and I like the way that it really does sort of snap, you know, put the final button on the coat that is Star Wars. You know, it's all buttoned up except for that last one, and then at the end, having Hayden there, you know, sort of puts that last little button up on the coat, and it just, everything is all snug and together. And I do concede that your argument is the better thought out argument, but I just, like, for the aesthetic purposes and the way that it connects the two trilogies, I prefer that change. So, and I'm not going to disagree anymore because there's nothing else to really say about that change for me. Yours is much more in-depth and thought out and well-reasoned than my opinion, than my my argument.
No, yeah.
But I just liked it.
Yeah, no, you know, it's not a, you know, we're not combating each other here. It's not a debate.
Exactly.
For who's going to win. You know, I respect your opinion. You're right. You know, it does do a good job of connecting the stories. I just don't like it in the overall scheme, like I just said. But again, even that change, I don't like when that happens. I don't like, oh my God, I hate this. It's fine. I mean, you know, it's the only one I really don't like. Like I said, it's the only one that's really, I really have a strong opinion about, but it's not the end of the world. Not a big deal. You know, that's the way I see it, is, you know, it is what it is, and that's fine. I'm not going to stop watching as a result. So, but, you know, that's all I have to say about all the changes and whatnot. You know, so unless you want to mention anything else, Jason.
No, I'm good. I think we've discussed that very well in depth. So,
yeah.
And we've still got a few more things we got to get done by the end of this show. So let's
Yeah, let's get to those then.
Yes.
Just my wrap up thoughts then, and obviously feel free to give some of yours as well. You know, there's lots of other controversies, if you will, that I'm sure we could have brought up tonight. And these are just kind of some of the big ones. And like I said, you know, Jason and I even don't necessarily agree on all the same stuff, yet I love Star Wars, he loves Star Wars, so great, let's talk about how we love Star Wars. And I think that's the important thing, you know. Are there going to be things that we don't like about these films over the next few years? Sure, absolutely. But, you know, these movies changed my life, just like I'm sure they've changed yours. And, you know, no change is going to take away from that. You know, again, you know, having disagreements is fine. It's not a big deal. No reason to get up in arms about it, because, you know, they're just movies. They are what they are. Most of these changes, the way I look at them is just like, well, whatever. You know, maybe I'm not crazy about this one or that one, but whatever. I don't care. I love Star Wars. Give me whatever you want. I will watch it, and I will enjoy it. So.
Exactly. Yeah, that's my thing. You know, with these changes and even these little issues that we had with some of the prequel stuff, it's all still Star Wars. It's all still something that we enjoy. Yeah, we do have little issues with certain things, but nothing's perfect. And it's like Carl said, it is a movie. And nothing about a movie for entertainment is worth getting riled up and fired up and just unloading on somebody online and just unloading on George Lucas and tearing it apart. Nothing is worth that. Absolutely. Because it is fiction. It's fiction. It may be impactful fiction. It may be something that we love to be a part of. But it's not worth just ripping people apart over. And that's where my issue is with a lot of these controversies. It's not so much the controversies themselves. It's the way that people handle them. And unfortunately, the online aspect gives a lot of the anonymity, a lot of people anonymity to just sort of unload and just rip to shreds people or opinions or George Lucas or the movies, and that's unnecessary. It's so uncivilized. So, you could have a disagreement, you could have a debate, but do it in a civilized manner, do it in a respectful manner. That's all I ask. I do like a good debate on occasion, and I do concede that in a debate, Carl would have won for that last argument as far as the Hayden Christensen change is concerned. It doesn't change my opinion, but it's still a valid opinion. It's still a Star Wars opinion. And I guess that's some of the things we forget about with these discussions, is that it's all still Star Wars. It's just a different point of view. So,
absolutely. Exactly. Great way of putting it. So before we get into our last little tidbit of the night, we'd like to introduce our lightsaber matchup for next week now, and then end on a little bit of a different note tonight in commemoration of Episode 1's re-release next week. So next week we're going to do a very exciting matchup. It's going to kind of bridge EU and the movies. So our next lightsaber matchup, we're going to pit Grandmaster Luke Skywalker. So this is Luke Skywalker all the way up through the Legacy of the Force series, so up to the latest EU we have, versus Darth Sidious, Emperor Palpatine, however you'd like to refer to him. So, the strongest Sith we've yet to see versus arguably what will have, Luke will have become the strongest Jedi. So give us your opinions on that one. We'd be really curious to talk about this one. I'm really excited.
Like Carl said, not only does this, we're expanding this past just the movies. This encompasses everything about these characters. So for Luke, movies all through, all the EU that takes place after. For Palpatine, it's the films and everything before and after that deals with that. So feel free to have a field day with this. I'm really curious to see what people think. I'm still trying to figure out who I think would win in that.
Me too.
But
yeah, it'll be fun.
But as Carl said, we are going to do a little tidbit in for the Phantom Menace here. Our next episode will not be recorded until after the Phantom Menace premieres in 3D on midnight at for February 10th, which I will be seeing a midnight showing in 3D. And so we asked you guys on Facebook and Twitter, what are you most looking forward to seeing in 3D? And we got some pretty diverse responses. I'll go ahead and read some of those. We got things like the pod race. The big ones were the pod race and the end battles. We had specifically the Battle of Naboo, like the planes and stuff. We had the duels between Qui-Gon, Obi-Wan, and Darth Maul. And somebody even mentioned the lightsaber battle between Qui-Gon and Darth Maul on Tatooine. Some of the other ones that I thought were interesting that people wanted to see is Nathan P. Butler was wanting to see things like how the Coruscant flybys, how those all fit in 3D. Jesse Ariano wants to see Watto flying in 3D, and the scene where Darth Maul is first introduced to us with the hologram, where he walks in to the hologram's view, he wants to see that in 3D. And then I just have to read verbatim what we got from Lord Bruticus, because he writes this in only a way that he could say, and it doesn't have quite the impact if I bullet point it. He says, Boss Nos jumping off his ride during the fanfare scene at the end, and because I have to remove my hat in respectful mourning when Maul gets cut in two. So those are the things he really wants to see. And what do you want to see? What are things that you're looking forward to seeing in 3D?
I'm going to have to go with, you know, kind of the typicals. I can't wait to see the pod race in 3D. I think that's going to be awesome. And also, I really liked what, you know, Nathan said as well. That just the flybys over Coruscant and stuff, that'll be really cool to see. And I think it was Jesse Collins who made this comment. Jesse Ariano. Or excuse me if I screwed up your name there. But he said, Watto flying with an exclamation point. I just thought that was hilarious. I'm really excited to see specifically the pod race and, of course, the duel. And the duel doesn't necessarily have to do with anything about it being in 3D. I just love that duel. So getting to see that again on the big screen, and I'm going to go see it in the IMAX as well. So it'll be great.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, I can't wait. Unfortunately, I won't be going at a midnight showing. I have to work the next day. No way I'd be able to work. And if I use a sick day, the kids would know why, so I don't want to do that either. So I will not be seeing it until Friday night, but that's okay. What about you, Jason? What do you want to see?
I do want to see the pod race. I do want to see the lightsaber duels. One of the things I'm most curious to see about, and actually it's funny that Jesse mentioned Watto flying, because that was one of the things I was curious about. You know, how does that all work? You know, I want to see that. But one of the things I'm most curious about seeing is the space battle. It's not the most big. It's not the biggest space battle that we get in the films. It's not the best one that we get. But I want to see how that all works, so that I get a glimpse of space battles in the future. You know, Revenge of the Sith and the original trilogy. I want to see how that might work. And then, of course, just for kicks, I want to see Jar Jar stick out his tongue in 3D.
I'm actually doing some quick looking right now, Jason, as we speak. Maybe you can enlighten me. I don't know that this is coming out in IMAX, or is it just 3D?
I think there is an IMAX 3D. I think the IMAX will be showing it in 3D, but I don't know if it's any different. I'm not sure.
Okay.
I don't.
Okay. Yeah, because I was just looking at my local IMAX theater just to see if they were putting up tickets yet, and I didn't see anything, and it's not even mentioned under the coming soon. So I don't know if it'll be an IMAX, which is fine. I just wasn't sure if you'd heard anything. But enough inquiries. I'll figure that out later.
Yes.
Good. Well, I cannot wait for the next show. So, obviously, our next show, we're just going to do a breakdown of all things Phantom Menace. I think we'll just be talking about the film and, of course, what we liked about the 3D. But it'll give us our first chance to do a film analysis, Jason. We've done some great character stuff, and this will be a great opportunity to talk about the film itself, which I'm looking forward to.
Me too.
But before we sign off tonight, just one last little piece of information. I've alluded a couple times now to our first Wampa's Lair giveaway. So tonight, just giving a little bit more information. I'm such a little teaser over here. You guys are probably already like, wow, this guy doesn't even know what he's doing. But so what we're going to be giving away is a 12-inch General Grievous Revenge of the Sith line action figure. So so that's what the giveaway will be. It'll be a 12-inch General Grievous from Revenge of the Sith. In the package, it's a bit beat up, the packaging is. So for you hardcore collectors, I apologize. But, hey, it's free. So stay tuned for the next show. We'll talk about how exactly we're going to go about giving that away.
Yes, yes.
So, Jason, again, been a lot of fun.
It's been awesome.
So,
but thank you, everybody, once again, for listening to the Wampa's Lair podcast, episode 9, Fan Controversies. Once again, I am your co-host, Jason Hunt, and for Carl, we will see you next time in the Wampa's Lair.
We almost forgot to tell you how to contact us. So if you'd like to get in touch with us at the Wampa's Lair, be sure to find us on Facebook at Wampa's Lair Podcast. Or also we can be found at Twitter at twitter.com/Wampa's Lair Podcast. And also if you'd like to send us an email at wampaslairpodcast@gmail.com. If you haven't liked us or followed us yet, please do so and get involved in our lightsaber matchups and giving us your thoughts on what you think of the show. And this is Carl from the Wampa's Lair saying goodnight.